Tonight's show was kindly sponsored by the Letterfrack Country Shop on 095-41850. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to The Food Show here on Connemara Community Radio. And for my show this evening, I've got a lovely guest with me here in the studio. I've got Professor Mike Lohr from Aquinas College.
Hello.
Hello, good evening to you. And Mike is going to be with us on the show, and we're going to be talking to him in a few minutes. And then later on the show, we're also going to be talking to Maureen O'Sullivan. And of course, Maureen is the president of the Vegetarian Society of Ireland. And Maureen is starting a new blog, so she's going to tell us all about that. But we'll come to that much later. Now we're going to be talking to Mike. And Mike, of course, is professor with Aquinas College. And Aquinas, of course, has been coming to Tully Cross for many a long year. And I was thinking, well, I had an email from Mike, and I noticed that his he was doing research because he's a lecturer in sustainable business development, Mike.
And sustainable development and sociology.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of work on how do communities do sustainable development? How do they take something that's a complex value laden concept and then make it real?
Okay. Well, in this particular case, of course, because this is a food show, so we have to kind of stay broadly within the remit of our show.
Yes.
You have done research into the Michigan Craft Brewery, and I'm just going to read out here that, your title of your paper was Pure Michigan Beer, Tourism, Craft Breweries and Sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
And I was immediately, of course, attracted to that and the whole thing about the craft breweries. So that's all it was at that particular time. I said, get Mike on the show, talk to him about the craft breweries. Is that a big thing, upcoming, blah, blah. And then, of course, I got the paper, so I better read the paper before I talk to the man. And I realised, of course, there's whole loads of issues around sustainable water, brewing, everything. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking now, Mike, and just to say to you, how did you come to this piece of research in the first place?
Well, obviously, I like to drink beer.
That's not obvious at all. If I saw Mike, that's actually not obvious. I just take it to just like beer.
Yeah. And so I grew up in Chicago and lived in Wisconsin for a while after that. And both of those places are heavy beer drinking culture places. And Michigan also is one of those. Founders is in Michigan, and that's one of the big breweries in town.
It's a long tradition, though, am I right in thinking, in Michigan anyway, brewing?
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah. There's about 40 breweries in West Michigan right now. There's actually a passport. They do a lot of tourism around this. So there's a brewery passport that if you go to 8 of the, I think it's like 40 or 23 participants, you can get a T-shirt.
Okay,
so they stamp your passport, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, so they've created a sort of a lot of fun around it as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Brilliant. So so you came to, of course, well, then brewing is big in Michigan, so that's how you came to the sort of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the things that you were finding out, or why do breweries start looking at sustainability? Or is it just craft breweries? Or
So craft breweries in particular are very tourism-based. If they're a destination brewery, they want to be able to tell you about where the, kind of like if you ever saw Portlandia and the skit about where the chicken is from, is it local?
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing goes on with beer.
Yeah.
They want to know where the ingredients are from. They want to know, what is the process?
Yes.
How is the process different or the same as everyone else?
Okay.
And so one of the things that I focused on was water usage, because we're right by Lake Michigan. It's one of the
big lakes. You have no problem with water. Yeah, then. No, you have enough water to sink the Titanic, really, basically.
Exactly. And the thing that's interesting is when you look into that, there's all these threats to that water supply. People are trying to pump water out of Lake Michigan to places over the Continental Divide, so the water won't necessarily come back to the actual watershed. There's the oil pipelines that are underneath the lake that different businesses put in there that are at risk of leaking. So a lot of the brewers are really concerned with water quality. I guess I should say, too, the reason why I'm really into brewing is because I do a lot of home brewing on my own, too.
Oh, brilliant. So, you'll be on the show all evening. We'll have to find Maureen O'Sullivan. So
with water, homebrewers use about 5 gallons of water to make 1 gallon of beer.
Okay.
A lot of commercial brewers, they use around 7 gallons of water to 1 gallon of beer. And then the really good, sustainable, let's say big brewers out there, like a Miller Coors, they can, because they can like tighten up all their nuts and bolts and pipes,
yes,
they can get the ratio down to almost 3.6 gallons to 1 gallon of beer.
So the trick is to try and maximize your water and keep it to the level. And I suppose, are they worried about things like, I presume, like big, you know, cities like Grand Rapids are growing all the time and expanding, and is there kind of a, I mean, like you look at Lake Michigan, but is it a bit like Ireland where you look, it's constantly raining, but then we still have problems with water quality or old pipe systems and things like that?
Yeah, so you may have heard of Flint, Michigan, the water and the piping and the water mixed together to have a perfect storm of leaching lead into the water supply. And a lot of our water infrastructure in the U.S. is under threat like that.
Yeah.
And so when you've got a big brewer like Founders in the city that's heavy in water use, they've got to have a really good relationship with the local municipality. Because they're both using water to make their product, but they're also using water to clean everything. And so even though the beer is very, like the water in the beer is, you know, it's delightful, the stuff that they use to clean all of the different equipment and everything, that stuff is very, it's gray water, it's black water, it's the bad stuff.
Okay, so there's lots of things going on there with the water. Mm-hmm. So getting back to our craft brewers then and their sustainability, what were your findings then, or what kind of things were they doing?
So they, one brewery in West Michigan, Shorts, they actually, in order to reduce their footprint, they were talked to by the municipality. They were taking too much water from the lake, and then they were also dumping too much dirty water back in. And so they decided they were going to create their own water treatment facility in-house.
Okay.
So they actually created a water treatment facility that treats all of that water they use to clean stuff. That water treatment facility rivals the municipality.
So they got it that clean.
Yeah.
Using layman's terms.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
And the other cool thing about them is they basically, one of the guys who was really interested in this basically dumpster dived. He just was rooting around in the garbage. And while he was rooting around the garbage, he found out that the thing that they threw away the most are the little plastic gloves that they use to inspect the beer, right?
Yeah.
And so that was something that was amazing to them, that they didn't even realize what it is that they were throwing away until they had somebody physically go in the dumpster weekly and figure it out. And what they did then is they talked to their supplier, which was I think it was like Kimberly Clark. It was one of those big companies, and they figured out that the company actually already had a right sizing program, so they are able to take the
gloves back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that you were saying to me earlier too that they set up in the company's little groups.
Yeah,
that was an interesting approach.
Yeah. So a lot of these craft breweries, they created The people who are interested in this in the breweries that have jobs doing other things in these breweries, they create sustainability committees, and it's sort of like a grassroots movement inside the workplace. Mm. And then actually in the case of Founders, that committee was called Strike Force Green. Yeah. And then in between me talking to them and interviewing, they changed the sort of internship position into a real position.
Okay.
So I can't claim credit, but I want to think that I like put the last little pin or, you know, poke them one last little bit, and they were like, oh, we really do need to make this an official position.
Yeah.
So instead of them just kind of doing two jobs or three jobs, they actually made someone a full-time sustainability coordinator there, which is really cool.
That's major cool, because they're obviously really committed then. Mm-hmm. But did they, just to get back, I suppose, to people always sell like sustainability, like you would think if you had a sustainable business, one would be very happy with that. But mm-hmm. people always sell like green, I think, in particular, like mm-hmm. to the skeptics, like you'll sell it, like it'll save money. So like, you know, so if you don't want to be green, if you don't want to do any of that stuff, but just mm-hmm. save money. That's like the ultimate kind of insult to them. Like, you know, that'll get them. Did they find that then when they started to look at all these different areas?
So the thing that's funny about brewing is that you're selling to, especially at least in the United States, it might be the same around here too. You're selling to a wide variety of the population.
Okay.
Yeah, and so, some of them are very interested in sustainability, and then others, they are very anti. They don't want to know about the politics of water usage or anything like that. So, okay. So for example, Sierra Nevada, they're actually almost a zero waste brewery, but you'd never know that. They don't market it.
Okay.
And even Founders, they've struggled with how much do they promote the fact that they're doing sustainability versus how much do they lead with, hey, we're just really, a lot of them would come back to, we're really just doing things to make really high quality beer.
Yeah.
And so, because there's a kind of political issue with some folks actually up in Shorts at their brewery. Some people, when they found out that the brewery was getting credits for, I think it was a couple of solar panels that they put up from the government, there were people who were writing in sort of hate mail, like, what, you can't have any government support, we don't want any government funding in our beer. You know, so it's like that kind of, there's that kind of divide. There are some people who search it out and they want to know that their beer is local and that the water, the hops, the barley is all pristine organic, recycled, and then there are other people who don't.
That's so interesting. But I mean, like, I don't think it would be at that level in this country. I think people put the beer first, and then, you know, and I mean, I think, you know, some people would be delighted that it was, you know, green and sustainable, and other people wouldn't care less, and they'd still drink it. But I don't think you'd be getting the hate mail because you had a solar panel. But again, like, at the same time, you know, people have been called, people who have been trying to promote green things have been called names like hippies and that kind of, you know, I mean, poor hippies, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, you're a hippie.
Yeah.
But that's good too. It's good at some stage of your life to be called a hippie. Mm-hmm. Going back then to the sort of, did you find out anything about where they get their hops or their grains from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So actually, in the let's see, it's Bell's Brewery. They're near one of the larger grain producing areas in the state, and they're getting their grain and their hops very extremely locally. And then when the other thing that people don't realize is that after the brewing process, there's spent grain, and so that spent grain, they use that as feed for all the livestock. Okay. So there's this kind of circular process that a lot of people don't know about, and a lot of Like Bell's can do that very well because of where they're located in the state. Shorts has a harder time to do it because it's a little further north.
Yeah.
But still, they have there's a lot of wineries up there that will use the spent grain up in that part of Michigan to use it as fertilizer.
That's interesting. So there's all these sort of other applications. Mm-hmm. Did you find out, or am I being politically incorrect? You know, that whole thing about spraying crops and stuff like that. Did they go down the road of sort of trying to, or do they spray the crops? I don't know. I was just very surprised to hear we were interviewing somebody once, and just the whole rapeseed oil is supposed to be really good for you, and you know, there's a great craze for it, because obviously olive oil is good for you, but olive oil is grown in Mediterranean type countries, and we don't really have Mediterranean countries here, but we can grow rape. And seemingly they one of the methods sometimes they do is they spray it with the chemical before they harvest it, so that kills all the weeds, and then they harvest it. So it struck me, God, thanks a million. So I'm doing something for my health, and it's just been sprayed. Like, I love that one. You know, so I'm wondering, do they is that part of this sustainability, or are they?
Yeah, so they try to do that, to shy away from that the best they can. One of the things that is tricky is some of the hop varieties are sort of, some of them are pesticide resistant, and some of them are pesticide attractant.
Yeah, yeah.
So they haven't, there's some things that just don't grow there.
Yeah.
That are difficult. In terms of grain, I mean, there are some varieties of beer that they are trying to have every single thing locally sourced, like in any other kind of foodie thing that you've seen. And then they do use that to market to different folks.
It's
basically, I think it's like something that was going on around here that I heard of, where they're trying to make like an ecotourism kind of scheme. I think it's similar with brewing, where there are brewers who are like, for example, Brewery Vivant, they're a B certified corporation, which is corporation for benefit. It's a different kind of corporation that it's kind of like LEED certification. They're trying to get sort of points for doing things that are good for the environment, good for their workers, good for the local community. And so they, like, to the point where their parking lot and the drainage that they have with water, so it's not just water that they're using in the beer, but then the water that falls on the ground in their parking gets recollected in a way
so
that's
more
really sustainable.
Going far with this. Yeah, because I've never heard of anyone doing that before.
Yeah, so they're like on in my findings, like Founders was on one end. They're kind of the bigger brewery that's doing it for the right reasons, but they're also, you know, they're trying to make sure they're in the right market space, I think. And then on the other end, Brewery Vivant, their whole like they were founded to just do this kind of brewing for, they call it beer the change.
Okay.
And so their whole market and business strategy is about trying to do good work.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Well, I mean, why not? I mean, have a beer and effect some change. I mean,
a beer and save the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's a great idea. I like that idea. I go to so many meetings and they never offer you a beer. I wouldn't mind saving the world and having a beer at the same time. But it's interesting though, Mike. And I found, or do you find, because you'd be in a much better position, that this is kind of a trend in certain business sectors in Michigan. We won't go a whole US, but in Michigan, that's a trend, that's sustainable and green procurement.
Oh, definitely. And a lot of I think the untold story is that a lot of these businesses, they are doing a lot of innovative work, but they're not leading with it. So it's stuff that you'd have to talk to their sustainability committee, and then you find out that they're making innovative they're making rubber bricks that you put in the toilet tank.
Yeah.
And they're trying to mass market those.
Yes.
To save water, right?
Yeah.
And then there are other breweries that are taking NASA technology. And I think this is more just like for the experiment and the kind of like wow / icky factor.
Yeah.
They take gray water and they recycle that into beer.
Okay.
And so there's a definite trend. There's like kind of a buzz about people trying to do things that are kind of edgy with sustainable practices.
Could you imagine you show somebody the gray glass of water and then you say, would you like a beer?
Exactly, yeah.
I'll try that one, but I'm not too sure. Yeah. So listen, do you know what we might do is we might play a quick piece of music, and then what we might do is ask you about home brewing as well. We have Maureen on the line, but I know Maureen won't mind. She's not on the line now yet, but she will be with us at 6:30. But this is Bernie has lined up for you. I don't know. This is one American beer song, and an Irish beer song. So we have two beer songs here now. So here we go. It's all, we're all beer this evening. So Brendan, take us away then, so Brendan.
Every woman says she loves you. Yes, don't pay that job no mind. Every woman says she loves you. Yes, don't pay that job no mind. Well, I said that's a new way to God. Yes, just passing with the time. They would meet you in the bell garden. Yes, they would drink up your last dime. Yes, they would meet you in the bell garden. Yes, they would drink up your last dime. Well, I say, when you ask them about going home with them, yes, boy, I will see you some other time. Yes, please, man, that's the way a woman is doing, you know.
So that was the American beer song, because we've got Professor Mike Lohr in the studio with us, and he's been telling us about a lot more than just your paper, Mike, but he's been telling us all about sustainable businesses especially in Michigan, and in particular the craft beer industry and the beer industry in general, and very, very interesting as well. But he let slip foolishly that he was into home brewing, so yeah. I was going to let him go earlier, but I'm not going to let him go now again. Mike, when did you get into home brewing?
I started doing that about 7 years ago.
What?
Yep. I it's one of those things where you start drinking,
yeah,
and then you're like, how I could make this probably, because
yes,
basically beer is, if you can make oatmeal, you can make beer.
Okay. So you run out and buy your hops or your, and then your water, and you have, yep, your demijohns. I haven't a clue now. I only know a demijohn. I'm not even 100% sure what a demijohn is. Beer making, by the way, is something I'd love to do, because I'd drink it as well, but I probably would never leave it for any length of time to mature. I'd probably be drinking it as I'd be making it. But anyway, bring us through the process, yep, though, really,
so,
I suppose.
So the process is you... let's see, I'm going to mess up all the words for this. You basically take the grain, yeah, and you boil the grain. I believe that's called the boil.
Yeah.
And I make very small batches. I make a gallon batch.
Yeah.
So it's like at the end of the day, you get maybe 20 bottles of beer.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Nice for a barbecue or friends coming over or something. Lovely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the boil is basically you're making oatmeal. I mean, yeah, it's your oats and your barley, and you're basically making a kind of sugar water, and I'm blanking. All the beer nerds out there will they will spank me for not having the right words for this, but you make this sugar water, and You then put in some hops. You put in your yeast. You let it sit for about a month, and it carbonates on its own. And after that month, you got beer.
And then you bottle it, and away you go, and you strain it and bottle it, and all that kind of stuff and everything. And do you ever, are you ever tempted to add like other flavors to it to see, like, what, you know, what can you make other sort of combinations, things you can't get in the in the bar?
Well, and that's definitely what attracts me to craft brewing, is that all of the people who are doing craft brewery work are taking more than just your hops, barley, and water, and they are putting in, like, you know, different berries, different, like, chocolate nibs, like, you know, they might put in olive oil, they might take, there's all kinds of stuff that they might add in addition, and usually you add that sort of after the boil.
Okay.
And it's usually before you're fermenting.
Okay.
Sometimes people add stuff after you ferment, and then there are some really, you know, purist people think that that's a no-no. It's like adding sweeteners after you've done the process already.
No. Well, I mean, that's fair enough. And I suppose you're very popular with your friends then. Or maybe you're not popular with your friends. You drink all the beer before you get there.
So the thing that's nice about doing the small batches, where it's only 20 bottles, is that every time I've ever made beer, everyone's like, that's so good. But the thing is that they can't actually, because there's a limited supply, they can't compare it to anything else. Whereas my other friends, they do like the 5-gallon batches. And if they make bad beer, they're stuck with that for like a month.
Well, they're either going to have to recycle it, or they're actually stuck with it. Yeah, you're right there. And maybe their friend is saying, no, you're fine. I won't have another beer now. I have to get up early tomorrow. And they're kind of going, okay, I know now that you don't like that beer. One of my uncles used to do a little bit of home brewing, and it used to be quite lethal. You'd think it was very innocent, but it was actually quite lethal. But anyway, I don't know what he was doing. He had it under the stairs. We never really went in to investigate. But anyway, we drank it, though.
Well, the process is fun when you do it with other people, because then there's usually, you're doing the boil, and then you're having a beer while you're doing the boil.
Okay, so it's beer all the way, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, Mike, listen, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us this evening. Very good of you. And now we're going to play for you, especially, the Irish beer song. Thanks a million, Mike Lohr.
You're welcome.
Lonesome away from your kindred and all, by the campfire at night where the wild dingoes call. But there's nothing so lonesome, so dull or so drear, than to stand in the bar of a pub with no beer. Now the publican's anxious for the quota to come, there's a faraway look on the face of the bum. The maid's gone all cranky and the cook's acting queer, but a terrible place is a pub with no beer. The stockman rides up with his dry dusty throat, he breasts up to the bar, pulls a wad from his coat. But the smile on his face quickly turns to a sneer when the barman says sadly, the pub got no beer. There's a dog on the veranda, for his master he waits, but the boss is inside, drinking wine with his mates. He hurries for cover, and he cringes in fear, it's no place for a dog, round a pub with no beer. Oh, Billy the blacksmith, the first time in his life, has gone home cold sober to his darling wife. He walks in the kitchen, she says, you're ready, me dear. Then he breaks down and he tells her that the pub's got no beer. Oh, it's lonesome away from your kindred and all, by the campfire at night where the wild dingoes call. But there's nothing so lonesome. So so dull or so drear as to stand in the bar of a pub with no beer.
So that was the Dubliners there and a pub with no beer. And we were playing that especially for Mike Lohr there. Now, I'm delighted, of course, to have my pal on the line, Maureen O'Sullivan. Hello, Maureen. How are you?
Hello, Janice. How are you? I'm very well, thanks.
Now, we weren't playing that one for you, although I'm sure you wouldn't refuse a glass of beer if we offered you, especially if it was a lovely home-brewed or a craft brewery glass of beer. But no, that was we're just playing that one there for Mike. But Maureen, of course, for listeners, you are the president of the Vegetarian Society of Ireland.
That's right.
But you're also yourself, you're a vegan as well as a vegetarian. But because you've been very good to us the last couple of years with the Connemara Green Festival, and you travelled out to Letterfrack, and you have given the most wonderful, I suppose, vegetarian really cookery demonstrations. But you did some vegan recipes as well. But I have to say, how many people did we have, Maureen, at the last one?
About 35.
I thought it was more than that, to be honest.
35 or 40, yeah. I thought so, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I suppose, again, for our listeners, we had a wonderful time. We had the cookery, and we were flat out working, Maureen, weren't we?
We were, yeah, all three of us this time.
Yeah, because we also had Isaac Garcia, and Isaac is Mexican, and he was doing, he made the sort of this amazing guacamole, like the real thing.
That's right.
And and then, of course, he did Trojan work with cleaning, and I mean, just a lot of work to feed 35, to do. Well, you did a cookery demonstration, and I suppose we were your assistants, then we had to feed all those people as well, which was great. I mean, we weren't complaining, but...
No.
But Maureen, since then, what have you been up to yourself?
Well, I had just finished my PhD, actually.
Yes.
And I had minor corrections to do. So I did them, and I was teaching that term. So then I've been over to Edinburgh twice and have finally submitted my PhD, and it's all on paper now. I'm officially a doctor.
Are you a doctor? Do I have to call you Dr. Maureen anymore?
You certainly don't. And it's not a medical doctor, so I'm afraid.
No, don't ask you about any medical problems either.
If you've got a sore toe, I'll sympathise, but I won't have any remedy for it.
Yeah. But am I right in thinking that you're looking to maybe do a bit more work on the whole vegetarian, vegan?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, this year is the 40th year or birthday of the Vegetarian Society of Ireland in its current formation, because it's been around for hundreds of years, actually, in one form or another.
Mm.
But, you know, obviously societies, sometimes they run out of steam for a bit of time, and they get up and going, you know, again, when people get interested. So we want to do a few things to celebrate that. So I've been giving a lot of kind of personal advice on social media and stuff like that, on recipes and how to get started in vegan cookery for quite a few years. So I've decided to draw that together and to start a food blog called The Avocado Apple. And it's to reflect kind of my partner, Isaac, and myself, like our heritage of the avocado being from Mexico and apple being, well, I suppose, more or less an indigenous plant in Ireland.
Brilliant.
So to reflect, just plant cookery, plant-based cookery as well. And so I'm going to start doing a lot of different recipes, and our theme is going to be from the simple to the complex.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of times when people want to start experimenting with a new type of cookery, you can get gorgeous books and they've got 30 ingredients.
Oh, yeah. And it's very off-putting at 7 o'clock on a Thursday evening.
Yeah, you can't find the sumac or something like that. And you think, okay, you know, what's that? So what we're going to do is we're going to start off doing recipes with maybe 3 ingredients and then kind of giving some instruction on how to build those up. From simple to gourmet.
Okay, so you could take your 3 basic ingredients and make yourself your supper or your lunch. And then if
that's
you wanted
right.
to, you could add something or something and something and something to it.
Exactly.
And that's a bit like your cookery demonstrations as well, Maureen, isn't it?
Probably,
because you kind of do something simple and then you do, you jazz it up as well. So you kind of, that's from my observations anyway.
That's what I try to do anyway, I suppose, you know.
Yeah. So where will be the blog then? Will it be on the vegetarian website, or will you be able to do it yourself, or what way were you going to do it?
Well, yeah, I'm going to put a link to it on the Vegetarian Society website.
Yeah.
So that's vegetarian.ie anyone who wants to
It's a good site for recipes already.
Yeah, it is. I did up a few recipes there a few years ago, but like currently they're in text form.
Yeah.
And I mean, increasingly people like to see visual demonstrations.
Oh, you're going to do that as well?
Yeah, like Isaac is a photographer as well as, well, he's got many talents. But he said he'll do the videos.
Okay.
So it'll be a little bit rough and ready to get started. But I mean, it is homemade, so,
yes.
You know.
Yeah.
We're not aiming for, you know, a very, very glossy kind of anything, actually. We're just aiming to get started and, you know, to, I suppose, set some targets as well for ourselves so that we don't talk about it and then not do anything about it, you know.
So, no, I kind of understand that. But I mean, if I did all the things I was talking about, I'd be working 24 hours a day. I mean, you know, it is true. Yeah. And you want to do them to a level as well. I know you want them to be accessible to people, but you do want to do them to a level. Now, will you be putting them then on YouTube, Maureen?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
We're just getting our heads around the technology. So I started it up on WordPress today, actually.
Oh, great.
Then
we can start following you, so.
Yeah. Next week we'll start getting some material up there and start prettifying the site a little bit. So I think one of the things I'm going to be looking at is doing omelette and pancake alternatives, because that's very popular, obviously, around pancake Tuesday. We're a little bit late now this year, but at least we can get started. And there are a lot of different substitutes.
Yes.
So, you know, that are actually used quite often in Italy, for instance. They use chickpea flour a lot to make pancakes. But depending on what you add into them, you can get a whole host of different textures. Like you can put in cider vinegar, bicarbonate, flaxseed ground. It gives a kind of an eggy constituency.
Okay.
So there are about 20 different varieties that you can use, soya yogurt, different types of flours, gluten-free as well, and then obviously with different protein and carbohydrate balances. So, you know, for people following different diets, hopefully we'll fill a few niches for people.
Yeah, that's interesting because, obviously, you know, being a vegetarian or being a vegan, but I mean also does people have other dietary concerns, so you want to kind of it's hard to get them all in the one place, Maureen.
It is. Well, we'll do our best.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I think you might be on onto something here.
Yeah. There are a lot of people who, you know, they might go into veganism or vegetarianism for health reasons initially.
Yeah.
And there are some people with autoimmune problems that they might have a whole host of different allergies. And the thing about it is that if you've got somebody who's kind of tried and tested the recipes already and can advise, I think that's very useful.
No, absolutely, you know? Absolutely. And I suppose, I mean, of course, from coming from someone like yourself, who's the president of the Vegetarian Society of Ireland, I mean, obviously, you've walked the walk, you know, you've talked the talk. But Maureen, I suppose the other question I had for you was, do people often contact you? Because I imagine that would be something. Now, I mean, obviously, you can't spend all your time just answering people's queries. You're not running an advice clinic. But at the centre, do people often contact you with questions? Because you and I were quite taken, I think, our first cookery demonstration, when somebody came up to you afterwards and you were able to help them. And we were quite taken that we might have helped somebody.
Well, we'd get an awful lot of queries about a whole host of different things.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, I think it's no secret that a lot of girls around puberty, they can get very funny about meat.
Yeah.
And, you know, experience a lot of bodily changes, and, you know, they're coming into adulthood and they have changes in their impression of, you know, what they're eating and stuff like that. And, I mean, if you undertake a radical change to your diet, it can go one of two ways. Sometimes you can put on absolutely heaps of weight, or you can lose heaps of weight as well.
Yeah.
And so in the videos, we will be advising on, you know, if you need to put on a half a stone, there are ways to do it very, very easily and in a very delicious way as well.
Mm.
Or similarly, if you need to take some off, you can. So
well, you can tell me about all the recipes for taking it off. I'm only joking. No, but I know what you mean.
Experimenting with that.
You can experiment on me. But I know what you mean. Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I suppose the other question I had for you as well, because we were doing, we always kind of do in January, the first week in January, we always kind of look at the food trends.
yes.
in the US and then the UK and then Ireland, just kind of as it comes down the line. And the number one food trend was veganism.
That's right.
I suppose you don't find that amazing, but after being one for so long yourself and being on that lonely journey as it was, I suppose, do you find it now it's a totally different place?
Totally. I suppose the one thing that a lot of vegans are finding now is that a lot of restaurants are claiming to offer vegan food, but they actually don't have any idea what it is. You'll find on the allergen list that it contains eggs, milk, mollusks, oyster sauce, all this sort of thing. And so there is a bit of a knowledge gap there at the moment, which, you know, we'll hope to address down the line as well. But in terms of the availability, like, for instance, Ennis has got an all-vegan cafe package.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And have you been down? I mean, do you approve of them? I mean, they are doing what they say they're doing,
Oh, God, Yeah. They've had a health food store there for years, and Cork has got a vegan cafe as well, 143.
Okay.
They're all
what's the one in Ennis, just out of...
It's called Peckish.
Peckish, old great
Peckish
name.
Peckish Cafe, yeah. It's in the... Yeah, you won't be peckish when you come out of there, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm down in that area for the evening, so I think I'll be having breakfast there tomorrow, so...
Okay, yeah, well, brilliant, yeah. And Maureen, you kind of... I mean, obviously, you're the one to ask, because you've been the one that's been going around over the years trying to feed yourself. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I think things have changed immeasurably for the better in the last couple of years. But... it was a lonely old spot there trying to find something to eat.
Well, do you see, it was very easy for me because my mum is vegetarian.
Okay.
And the family were very supportive. So, and I've always cooked.
Yourself. But you still have to go out. You still travel. You have to go around for things. Do you know what I mean? To find stuff when you're out, like, was very difficult, I would imagine.
But I've been vegetarian since I was 12.
Yes.
So it was kind of automatic.
Yes.
And my mum always ate her food separately.
Okay.
So there was never any issue. This idea of, you know, having separate meals and stuff like that, it was just what we did in our house. So it's never really been an issue. I think one of the big changes is the fact that the supermarkets have moved in very recently, so you can get an awful lot of stuff there. But I would ask people not to forget about the fact that it's actually the health food stores that have kept us going for 40 years and longer as well, you know, to try and get a bit of a balance. Sure, it's important to... you know, to have food that's affordable, but it's also important to, you know, support small businesses and stuff, I think, so.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. Sure, if you wanted a lentil in this country, the only place you could get it was in a health food shop.
That's right,
Now, we have a very good local store ourselves, and we were always very lucky that there was a very advanced purchasing policy. But you're absolutely right about health food stores. Any time I was in one, I'd always stock up on things, because it was the only place you'd ever see anything like that, to be honest with you. But of course, as you say now, it's in all levels of supermarkets. And again, I suppose, would you be worried yourself a little bit about when supermarkets and big companies start to make products as well? I mean, fine to be selling a packet of lentils, but when they start to make vegetarian or vegan dishes, you kind of then say to yourself, "Wow, here we go now. They're even at that now, like, you know." But they're making money out of it. They're not doing it really they're doing it to make money, like, basically.
Yeah, do you know, the whole food chain is very complex, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the thing about it is that do you decide not to buy a product from a company that's got a parent company that's maybe, you know, farming beef or something like that?
Yes.
It's an ethical question that's very difficult.
Yes.
I suppose we don't live in a perfect world. So you've got to kind of make your choices.
Yes.
Personally. And I suppose the thing with social media now is there's so much information out there that we're greatly enabled, in that respect. There are some supermarkets, of course, that have actually hired vegans to design food products for them.
Well, that's good, I would say.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
But, you know, there are also excellent products available in health food stores. And actually, you know, when you do a price-per-price comparison now, actually a lot of the, well, some of the supermarket products are similar or actually more expensive in some cases. So
So it's good to shop around as well.
It's very good to shop around. Yeah.
So being positive, I suppose, on a positive note, it's great that there is this choice and variety.
Yeah.
But people have to realise it's up to themselves as well to do a bit of research and just sort of look at the prices and look at the contents and, mm-hmm. and you still have to do that. Like, but I suppose vegans are well used to doing that anyway. Of any food group, they're probably very mm-hmm. used to doing it. But I suppose what do you think then about that whole thing that's always been thrown at, I suppose, vegetarians and vegans in particular, mm-hmm. that whole thing of like air miles and sure, aren't you bringing it from Africa, or you're bringing it from South America, or you're bringing it from China, sure, like, you know, that never grew in Ireland anyway, so, like, you know, what's the story here?
That's a very good point, and thanks for raising it. Well, the first thing is, obviously, the feed for most animals is soya,
mm.
so that comes from Brazil, mainly. Brazil is a huge soya cultivator, and a lot of the clearances of the Amazon are, like, for the production of food to feed cattle. So the actual soya production for consumption by vegans would be relatively small. And obviously there are a lot of alternatives as well. Mm. And oat milk has become very popular, for instance. And obviously oats can be grown locally. So that's not so much of an issue. And then it's very much a choice as to what you eat. If you eat local, like I do try to make a conscious choice about that. Mm. I think that's, you might struggle if you were living up a mountain in Ireland to feed yourself. Do you know what I mean?
I'm just saying, like, I mean, I would love to think we couldn't, you know, we'd have our tunnel and we'd be growing our vegetables and all that. But that in our climate can be time consuming. Mm-hmm. And we don't all have a tunnel, and we might not all have access to land. And, you know, so there are issues there. And I suppose that whole thing about, you know, genetically modified crops and, like you said, oats, but do we know that the oats is okay, or are they spraying it?
Oh, no. I mean, there are standards. If you read up on it, for instance, if you're very concerned about spraying, there are organic standards. There are a whole host of them, but the Soil Association, or UK5, is a very high standard, and they do actually check the farms regularly and stuff. And, you know, only a very limited number of pesticides and herbicides are allowed, and they're generally derived from the soil anyway. So,
but if it's something kind of like like soya that's not grown in Ireland, as far as I know, then, you know.
They're labelling rules, though, in the EU. They're supposed to be labelled. So now, obviously, because of the way in which food is, you know, harvests are collected and stuff like that, they generally tend to be brought into huge vats.
Yeah.
So the FSAI, which is the Food Safety Authority of Ireland, did a study on soya products a few years ago. So, like, inform yourself. Do have a look at their website. They did find a bit of cross-contamination. But the thing about it is that if you're modifying crops, there's going to be a little bit of contamination, but a little isn't a lot.
Mm,
you know what I mean? So, like,
oh, I know, there's levels. I mean, people would say, oh my God, there's X in such a thing. And then someone else would say, yeah, there is X in it, but you'd have to actually eat it every day for the rest of your life. And even at that, it wouldn't have any effect on you. You know, so there is levels, all right.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is what it does say is have as varied a diet as possible, because I remember reading something about poor communities that relied very heavily on corn. Well, if you were going to genetically modify the corn, that might be 60% of the diet of some communities, whereas it would be 10% of the diet of other communities. So, you know, have as varied a diet as possible.
Now, one of my little nieces, this is not totally nothing to do with being vegetarian or vegan. This is just asking you now, because you're very well up on all this thing. She's not eating chocolate now, or certain things, because they've got palm oil in them.
Oh, I see.
Something to do with
orangutans.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. This has actually become a huge discussion, a topic of discussion in vegan groups.
Mm.
So palm oil is it's farmed, or it's cultivated in Indonesia, and apparently a lot of forests where orangutans would naturally live have been cleared. So there's a loss of habitat there, leading to their death. Now, the thing about it is, I'm actually not quite sure, and I'm looking into it myself at the moment. Because if you go to the Asian stores in Galway, or any place around the country, a lot of West African cookery is done with palm oil.
Okay,
and palm oil is a local product to them. They're certainly not getting it from Indonesia. They're growing it in West Africa.
Yes.
And then there are some companies like Suma, which is an English cooperative. They do a lot of margarines and beans and stuff like that. And on their, like, the reason that they use palm oil if you remember back around 30 years ago, I'm not suggesting you remember.
Jane will remember 30 years
ago. I certainly do.
I was looking at Maureen, of course I do.
I'm just joking.
I was halfway through my life then, for God's sakes. No, I was going to laugh and say, Maureen, I can't remember what I did yesterday. I remind 30 years ago. But go on anyway, test me out.
But do you remember that a lot of margarine they used to solidify the margarine by hydrogenating it.
Yes.
So they add they put it through a hydrogenating process, and that's apparently not very good for you.
And everybody gave up margarine. And people used to use
that's
it in
right.
baking an awful lot.
That's
and if
right,
you if
yeah.
you look at old-fashioned baking books, it's never butter, it's always margarine.
That's right. Yeah, there was a trend.
And then the trend completely changed and went to people using butter all the time in baking.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the thing was that the producers of a lot of margarine then started looking around for alternatives.
Okay.
So fats that were solid at room temperature.
Okay.
So coconut is one.
Okay.
But if you get a margarine based on coconut and you've got a hot day, it'll run all over your bag. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
So it's semi-solid at room temperature. But palm oil is solid at room temperature. So if you mix it up with other oils, it'll give you a solid product.
Okay.
So the thing is that, so it's from a culinary point of view, it's very useful. But there is this issue of habitat. Now, the other thing is that Suma, for instance, they say that they source their palm oil from sustainable sources in Colombia and Brazil.
Okay.
So from where I'm looking at it, I think there's some palm oil that is problematic, but I'm not sure about others.
Yes, of course.
So I think that if you've got a reputable co-op, saying that they're able to source theirs and they're telling you where it's from.
Yes. Because, I mean, they wouldn't run the risk of lying on that kind of a level.
I'm imagining not. No. So I'd encourage people to look into the source.
Mm. It's interesting, though, isn't it?
Just, if you've got a query, ask the company themselves.
Mm.
Raise it with them because, I mean, companies are increasingly very responsive to consumer concerns.
Of course. Well, your consumers, I'm sure, like the big man, I'm sure they're not contacting you every day of the week. So when they do get something like that, a query like that, I'd say they sit up and take notice of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And maybe they look for alternatives as well, you know.
Well, Maureen, it's awful interesting chatting to you.
I've
gone away from the whole... So I'll just go back to your blog again now.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone away from that. So it's going to be called Avocado and Apple.
The avocado apple.
Okay,
uh-huh,
brilliant.
That's right.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And like, if I just Google that now, will I get it, or what will I have to do?
You'll have to wait a couple of days.
Let
you know.
I'm putting you under pressure now, aren't I?
No, not at all. But I just wanted to let you know about it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Recipes will be forthcoming, and the contact details and everything like that will be forthcoming.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Bernie.
You can trust me on that one.
Bernie, who's here with me in the studio, is nodding over to me, and she's putting the thumbs up. Meaning we have the coup. We've got the first interview and the first kind of mention of it on media.
Excellent.
So we're ahead of the passé. No, we'll definitely.
Great.
I mean, I'll definitely follow you anyway, Maureen. But I think I think it'll be a really good one. We'll bring it up again. What we'll do is when it gets going, your blog.
Yeah.
We'll. You know, go through it here on the show one evening and tell people about it again, because I think, you know, there is a lot of, you know, it's great to have that kind of information out in the public domain, and it's the way that you're planning to focus it is the interesting one. And you're right, I mean, nothing is as nice as a fabulous cookery book, but by God, sometimes you'll be looking at the list of ingredients. I mean, sometimes I'm reading a recipe here and I go, oh my God, my listeners will kill me when they think, where the hell am I going to get that this hour of the evening, you know? And
we know a lot of alternatives as well. That's the other thing.
So yes.
If you can't get one thing, we can suggest a substitute.
Oh, that's super.
And
yeah.
We'll also be responsive. If somebody wants us to do experiments with stuff, we're very happy to do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Brilliant. Well, listen, give my best to Isaac.
Tell
him I was asking for him live on Connemara Community Radio. And my fellow toiler. We had a great time. And hopefully we'll do something again this year. We'll do something nice this year now for the Green Festival as well, Maureen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll be chatting. But listen, thanks a million. You've been a star to be with us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
Not at all. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet.
So that was the lovely Maureen O'Sullivan there. And she is going to start up that blog. And we'll come back to that again, because I know Maureen, I've been on cookery demonstrations with her, and she is nothing but I suppose you could say, sensible, really. And now we're going to go with one for Maureen, and this one is by Radiohead, and it's called Vegetable.
I worked hard, tried hard. I ran around in domestic bliss. I fought hard, died hard. Every time you're running out of here, every time you're running.
Like to support Connemara Community Radio, why not consider becoming a member or use our station for your advertising or sponsorship? Call us here at 095 41616.
So that was a piece of music there, Radiohead, and that one was A Vegetable. Now we're at that funny time of the evening. We're actually at the time of the evening where we haven't got any time to do another recipe or anything, so we've just got time to talk to thank our lovely guests that we've had this evening. And it's so funny, I've had a moment of a eureka moment during the week. I think I'm going to be dumping finally after 25 years all my recipes, because I've suddenly realised I've been cutting out of newspapers every week certain recipes, and this has been going on for 28 years, maybe longer, maybe near 30 years to be honest with you, and I've got an awful lot of them kept and filed away, and I suddenly realised that I've never cooked any of them. And I also realised that nowadays with the internet, this is pre-internet I started, that probably I can get a lot of them anyway online, so there's no need to actually have all these folders. But before I get them, dump them, I might share some of them with ye over the coming weeks. But anyway, Bernie's laughing here at me, so it just remains for me to thank my two lovely guests this evening, and thank Mike Lohr for taking the big effort of coming into the studio and being with us. And he was talking to us, of course, about craft brewing in Michigan, and it's a big, big state for brewing, and of course about sustainability issues and how craft brewers are using that whole sustainable issues, I suppose, and resolving sustainability and embedding it into their businesses. And then, of course, we're talking to Maureen O'Sullivan there, and Maureen, of course, President of the Vegetarian Society, and Maureen committed vegan herself, and she's done some wonderful cookery demonstrations. I mean, even if you never, even if you're the maddest mad eater, meat eater in the world, you would enjoy Maureen's demonstrations. And she's going to be starting a new blog there, which is going to be called The Avocado's Apple, and we're going to be maybe following that on the show as well. So that was our show for this evening. Just remains for me to thank you all very, very much for listening, and to thank Bernie very much for doing the desk. And of course, The Great Outdoors will be coming up now in a few minutes, and the team are already in the studio raring to go. So do stay tuned to us here on Connemara Community Radio.
The Food Show was kindly sponsored by Letterfrack Country Shop. 095-418-50.